The next case is 001456, Christie Smith versus Friendship Village. Mr. Day.
May it please the court, my name's David Day, I'm representing the appellant, and I would like to reserve 5 minutes of my time. There are two things I would like to do today, if it pleases the court. That may not be apparent, but one of them should. First, this is not a case in which the transcript of the investigation before the Ohio Civil Rights Commission is before the record in the record, because there was no petition for review. This case comes here because after the Civil Rights Commission had made a decision on Christie Smith's complaint, it dismissed, and ordered a dismissal after making the findings of fact, and there was no petition to the Common Pleas Court as the statute provides. I make that simple, obvious statement because all the criticism of the commission and its investigative processes that have been leveled by my opponents has no justification in the record of this court, of this case. Second thing I want to do, and is something I think the attorneys may have missed in preparing the briefs, but is apparent from the statutory provisions involved, including those that are attached. What is the effect of the Franklin County Court of Appeals decision on the work of the commission? And what is the effect of those courts who have agreed with Franklin County and the conclusion they have reached? Well, let's look at 0.05 and 0.06 of 4112 to see, before we finally address 0.99, the one that authorizes the civil action. The whole process in the Civil Rights Commission is started by the filing of a charge. It's not a complaint, it's a charge of discrimination. The first step then in the commission is an investigation of that charge and a conclusion whether or not there is probable cause to believe there was discriminatory activity. So the first conclusion the commission can reach is there is no probable cause, we are not going to issue a complaint, and we are going to dismiss your claim.
And that whole process takes investigation, maybe talking to witnesses, a lot of time, doesn't it?
Yes.
Especially when you've got so few people having to adjudicate so many claims.
Your Honor, I'm not...
If that's the case, why do you keep people out of court, then? They ought to have the right to go to court to redress that, shouldn't they?
It's my understanding.
How many cases we had to adjudicate with the Civil Rights Commission, and they're just overloaded.
Your Honor, that is a matter that is taken care of by the statutes in which the Civil Rights Commission routinely, and I think annually, if I remember the statute right, reports to the legislature. So the remedying of that situation can be done most uniformly by the legislature in response to those reports that it gets. That, I suggest to you, is a political matter that cannot properly be remedied in cases such as this in this court. But let me go to the next step.
Why wouldn't your response be that there's nothing that prevents the aggrieved person from filing an action, a civil action, if they choose to do that?
There is nothing that prevents them to file before the commission makes a decision.
If the commission is as bad as the appellee says it is, in their brief, I mean, they've really taken to task. As you say, it's not before us, but if it's that bad, then it would seem to me that the person would choose to go to file civil action. Don't bother with the Civil Rights Commission.
Well, one of the arguments they've made is these people don't have attorneys, but again, in this record, Christy Smith had an attorney before the commission at every step this case has traveled through the commission and the courts.
Why wouldn't we look at this on a strict statutory construction basis? In age discrimination, they say you cannot. You elect, you're stuck. In these cases, they don't say that. So don't they clearly leave the door open for either or? Because they don't make a distinction, they certainly have shown us they know how to.
I don't believe so, Your Honor. Let me go the second step. The commission, through investigation, finds there is probable cause, files a complaint, and schedules a hearing, takes the evidence. Once that procedure is completed, then the commission has two alternatives. The commission can find on the evidence that there has, in fact, been a violation.
I know what the procedure is. That doesn't answer the question of the statutes on age discrimination specifically say you can't go this route, and they don't on sex discrimination. So doesn't that clearly tell us what the legislative intent is? It doesn't matter what the procedure is. It's what the intent of the legislature is, and that was not to foreclose the ability to file concurrently.
I agree. It didn't want to foreclose the ability to file initially. I would agree this legislature didn't want to foreclose the ability to file at any time, because it's not this case, before the commission makes a decision. But all three of the decisions that the commission can make during the process of administering these claims are subject to review by a petition for review in the Compleys Court. The test is whether there's credible evidence, and that court has exclusive jurisdiction, which brought to my mind last night that at some point in time, one of the courts below or myself should have said, isn't this a jurisdiction of the subject matter issue? But, Your Honor, let me go to the final conclusion of what I'm trying to present to this court on that issue. You look at the statute, it wasn't there when this procedure was enacted. There is no doubt that the only route any of these decisions could take into the courts from the initial enactment of the statute was by a petition for review in a court that had exclusive jurisdiction. Now, in, I believe it's the 70s or early 80s, the legislature comes back and says, oh, but you can file a civil action. So obviously, that is an alternative at the beginning. But don't you have to be reasonable on your construction of that statute in conjunction with a statute that places jurisdiction by petition for review and specifies a specific standard for review in order to reach the conclusion that once a decision is made, then a civil suit cannot thereafter be filed? I haven't argued that the election occurs at any time until the commission makes the final decision. Now, think of the consequences of the Court of Appeals and comparable court's decisions. Can't any complainant who is unsatisfied with the no probable cause decision, unsatisfied with the probable cause decision, an evidentiary hearing, but still no reason to believe there is discrimination, and then finally is unsatisfied with the court's finding that there was discrimination, but they don't like the remedy. Now, aren't all of those, if the Court of Appeals decision stands, subject to be disregarded? Respect for the administrative tasks that have taken place, the efforts that the people and the hearing officers and the commissioners have put into the case, Can't they all, if the Court of Appeals decision is affirmed, now go back to Common Pleas Court if there's still time and start a new action and subject all of the respondents to this whole second process? What I'm suggesting, Your Honor, in answer to your question is you have to construe point 99 reasonably in relation to the other statutes with which it functions. You can't stretch it just to obviate all the work of the Civil Rights Commission and dump all of these cases at the whim of the complainants back into the court system. The other point is, what is the criticism that this court has, if any, or the appellees, with the fact that there is a standard for review that doesn't apply in a jury case, but it does apply after the petition has been filed in the Common Pleas Court? What do you do with the jurisdictional statute? Stop and think. We wipe out the jurisdictional statute, and we use 99 to say you can go into another court. If the statute stays in on jurisdiction, what effect does it have? Doesn't a decision, as the Franklin County Court of Appeals made, to the effect that 99, that a decision by the commission has no restraint on filing in Common Pleas Court, in effect, wipe out the jurisdictional provisions of section, I believe it's section SF of 0.06.
So you'd have been fully satisfied if they'd appealed the Ohio Civil Rights Commission's determination?
I think it would have been quite appropriate if they had appealed it to the Common Pleas Court under 0.06.
But then you're in court on a different standard, aren't you?
Yes. But the legislature has provided that.
Trying to sift through my mind which would be more restrictive. Because obviously we're directed to, these are remedial statutes, and we're directed to construe them liberally.
I'm not sure I follow you, but the standard in this case, had it been permitted to progress before a jury, would have been a jury decision.
Yeah, but if you appeal from the Ohio Civil Rights Commission, the standard is reliable probative evidence, right?
That's right.
Substantial reliable probative.
And there is another provision that permits the Common Pleas Court to take additional evidence if it finds it's appropriate.
And does it come out the same way?
It doesn't go to a jury, and it isn't the same as a brand new trial. It's a normal agency review process. And if, Your Honor, I don't want to stop responding to you, but I want to save a few more minutes. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Day. Mr. Mao.
May it please the court. My name is Joshua Morrow, and I represent the appellee, Christy Smith. Friendship Village asked this court to rewrite Ohio's laws against discrimination by writing into the statute an election of remedies, even though the General Assembly did not mandate an election for claims of disability discrimination. This court's ruling on this issue will affect every person who files a discrimination claim in the state of Ohio under Ohio's laws. A decade ago, in Huntington v.
Claim or a handicap discrimination claim?
In every other claim other than age discrimination.
Okay, other than.
A decade ago, in Alec v. Huntington Bank, this court recognized that a person who believes he or she has been illegally discriminated against may take two different avenues to prove the discrimination. One avenue is requesting the Ohio Civil Rights Commission investigate the claim. The other, completely different action is an independent right under 41.12.99 to pursue his or her own claim of discrimination in the Court of Common Pleas. Although a person may use either avenue, there is no basis for a ruling that a person may not use both avenues until the first forum makes a final ruling, and then that then would have a preclusion effect on the second forum. The present system, the one that that all courts of appeals are operating under except the Jefferson County Court, where there is no election of remedies for cases other than age, works in effectuating the purposes of Chapter 4112. The goals of Chapter 4112 are ending discrimination and protecting the victims of discrimination.
Now, excuse me, you indicated until there is a final resolution and then there is a preclusion.
Correct. After there has been a full evidentiary hearing, when Ms. Smith or the claimant has an opportunity to present her whole case and to present all the witnesses, then that holding. But here, there was the no probable cause finding was not a holding. It was merely an indication from the Civil Rights Commission that it didn't want to go forward and issue a complaint.
And this is part of the accepted case law at this point, is if you're just tossed at the Civil Rights Commission, that's not a final determination.
Exactly. And this court has even held or even recognized that the OCRC issuing a no probable cause is not a judgment. It's not something that would give you would have a right to appeal except for the legislature provided for the 4112.06 appeal, which, contrary to what Friendship Village argues, it is not a question in 4112.06 appeal whether there is discrimination or not. The only question in that is whether the no probable cause finding by the Ohio Civil Rights Commission was unlawful, irrational, arbitrary, or capricious. It's not a question of whether discrimination is at that point. It's a totally separate proceeding.
Does the Common Pleas Court, if it finds, if there is an appeal to the Common Pleas Court, and the court finds that the no probable cause finding by the commission is an error, does it send the matter back to the commission, or does it...
I've never heard of a situation where a court of common pleas has ever held that. I do believe this correct procedure would in that case, but the standard is so high, I don't know if anyone's ever successfully challenged that standard.
So I thought there was a hearing in common pleas court under the merits, but you're saying there would not be. If the common pleas court decides there is probable cause to believe there was discrimination, What happens is that...
I believe it's sent back to the Ohio Civil Rights Commission to find a remedy at that point.
It seems to me that the strongest argument that the appellant has is 0.06F, and you didn't refer to it in your brief. Amicus didn't either. I'm wondering, is that because the jurisdiction, Common Pleas Court, was not invoked here? Is that why you think it doesn't apply, or...
It would not apply. It's just what I said. The 4112.06F is the exclusive jurisdiction of the Common Pleas Court. The Common Pleas Court does have exclusive jurisdiction whether the no probable cause finding was unlawful, irrational, arbitrary, or capricious. That's the only thing, the exclusive jurisdiction of the Common Pleas Court. The legislature made it very clear that you should not challenge a no probable cause by going to Court of Appeals or to this court. It was saying that it's very clear that you go to the Common Pleas Court to challenge that.
Well, it says the jurisdiction of the court shall be exclusive, and its judgment and order shall be final, subject to appellate review.
Correct.
Which means, obviously, one can appeal from the Common Pleas Court's decision. So we don't read that as your argument, I guess, would be that we don't read that as giving the Common Pleas Court exclusive jurisdiction versus 0.99.
Correct. Although it's very clear that you do file a 4112.99 case in a common pleas court other than filing with the court of claims against the state. But the present system, where there is no election of remedies for cases other than age, works in effectuating the purposes of 4112. The OCRC does a wonderful job at screening out bad cases and settling the meritorious cases. For certain situations where there is no attorney present, the OCRC does a great job of representing victims of discrimination. If this court requires an election, instead of filing a claim with the Civil Rights Commission, victims of discrimination would bypass the Ohio Civil Rights Commission and either find an attorney to represent them in a 411299 action or file a pro se action on their own. Because the Ohio Civil Rights Commission often screens out the meritless cases and settles the meritorious cases through their conciliation efforts, the result of an election requirement would be that most represented parties would file lawsuits instead of filing OCRC charges. An election requirement which Friendship Village requests would have a negative impact on the judicial resources in Ohio.
Counsel, I'm not quite understanding.
The remedy is available.
Why you can make that bold-faced conclusion that would be the choice of most people, particularly when you said it's the place that many folks aren't represented by attorneys.
Correct. But it
go.
Correct. But if this court was to rule that from the start you have no options other than to file one or the other, a claimant will start.
It would seem to me that most folks unrepresented by an attorney wouldn't even know about the options and would still go where they normally go.
I think that for a small number of people or half a number of people would, but if they happen to contact an attorney or even the Civil Rights Commission told them on their intake forms.
So
that,
what you're really saying is if you can't do both, attorneys, once consulted, would advise against going to the Civil Rights Commission.
Or even the Ohio Civil Rights Commission's intake people would advise people that you should probably seek representation before you make an election, because once you file an election, your case is over. This court has even held that the Ohio Civil Rights Commission doesn't even have to conduct an investigation once a charge is made. In 1985,
Have you done any study of what has happened in age cases where that election is required?
No, I haven't. I do know that there are a small number of age cases that are filed with the OCRC, either because they're preserving their federal rights or because they are unrepresented.
We don't seem to be inundated with age cases.
I guess there are a number of age cases, pending in the Court of Common Pleas and the Court of Appeals. But no, I have not done a study on that, and nobody else, no other organization I know of has. But election of remedies would be devastating to the number of victims of discrimination who have already operated under the text of the statute, which does not require an election of remedies for all discrimination claims other than age. Unlike age discrimination, for all other types of discrimination, such as disability discrimination, there is absolutely no statutory basis for an election of remedies.
How far up the system, if you take it to the Civil Rights Commission first and then appeal to the Common Pleas, at what point do you lose your right to proceed as a separate action?
I think after a full evidentiary hearing, the res judicata would apply.
So you would require... Well, let's say that it's sent back. Let's say that there's a probable cause finding, and they find remedies.
Yeah.
And you accept those remedies.
Okay.
You still have a right to go to Common Pleas and get more?
You would be precluded from re-arguing the issues under the doctrines of res judicata. This court has said that...
Arguing what issues? Just the back pay and reinstatement?
The issue of whether you've been discriminated against or not. If there has been a full evidentiary hearing and there has been a finding, this court has said in certain circumstances, administrative findings where there is a full opportunity to present your case would be bound by the doctrines of res judicata.
So, under your theory, if they find discrimination and they order back pay and reinstatement, you can, under the theory of res judicata, take that finding over to Common Pleas, file, and ask for punitives and attorney fees.
That would be a very interesting legal question, but I don't think any court has ever decided in that manner.
But that's the logical conclusion of what you're saying can happen, isn't it?
Well, there's a question of whether you've already, at that point, there could be a doctrine of election of remedies apply because there's been a full evidentiary hearing. But that is a far more complex issue than what's before the court today.
The other scenario is you lose. You go to the Common Pleas. Common Pleas affirms, says no evidence of discrimination.
I'm missing where you say, when you go to the Common Pleas, do you mean under 0.06 or 0.99?
The civil rights procedure.
Okay.
You lose at the civil rights level, you go to the Common Pleas, Common Pleas finds no probable cause, affirms the commission. Is that res judicata, or can you now go back and try to take a second bite at the apple and a Common Pleas suit?
First of all, Under that circumstances, you still have not had evidence you're hearing, so it would be second bite of the apple.
Let's say the court takes additional evidence. The court exercises its discretion, takes additional evidence, finds still no probable cause, affirms the decision. You can now go back and...
The present rulings of this court and the common police courts are, when you are challenging a no probable cause finding, you do not have the opportunity to submit additional evidence. You can challenge jurisdiction, but you cannot, on the issuance of whether it was probable cause or not, is only unlawful, irrational, arbitrary, capricious.
So
you don't have
it. Was incorrect when he said you could bring additional evidence?
Correct. You can bring additional evidence if the court does find, or I'm sorry, if the OCRC then does find that there is discrimination and there's a complaint should be filed. Then that challenge, the 4112.06, it would be the respondent's challenge, then that is when, and this court has held that you can
okay, so
submit additional
scenario,
evidence.
You could take the commission route, go to the court of appeals, go to the common pleas court, appeal to the court of appeals. All findings can be against you, and then you could start again in a civil suit.
There has still been no evidentiary hearing and no opportunity to present your case. At that up under those circumstances, which would be highly irregular, those circumstances, the claimant, the person that was the victim of discrimination, still has not had any opportunity to present her case. The only chance that the person had was I filled out a form and was able to tell the investigator how I felt that I was being discriminated against.
I guess I'm confused because the statute seems to give a complainant more to do than that. In the commission, it refers the court may grant a request. This is if there's an appeal. For admission of additional evidence when satisfied that such additional evidence is newly discovered and could not with reasonable diligence have been ascertained prior to the hearing before the commission. And then the findings of the commission as the fact shall be conclusive and supported by reliable probative and so forth. And such additional evidence as the court has admitted considered as a whole. That sounds to me as if there can be, if the complainant wishes, there can be a full hearing at the commission. Doesn't the commission hold hearings?
At that point, the scenario suggestion for Justice Stratton is that there has never even been a complaint filed. There has never even been a cause of action asserted.
Take my question then, because you've said in your brief that this is sort of perfunctory and there you may have a bad investigator we got too many cases here, so we just push them through. But the statute doesn't say that. Statute says there's an opportunity for a hearing, presentation of evidence. And so when you go to common pleas court, that's the record, unless you can show to the judge that here's some new evidence that wasn't available at the hearing at the commission. Is that not the way it happens? Or
this court has said that the OCRC has totally discretion on whether it even wants to conduct an investigation, let alone a hearing. There's no statutory basis for when a no probable cause is issued to force a hearing on the Ohio Civil Rights Commission. If they determine that there's no probable cause to go forward, a complaint is never even filed. And unless you seek 4112.06 and then you compel it to actually file a complaint and then go forward with the hearing.
So this reference to a transcript before the commission that's going to be reviewed by the common pleas court is on a probable cause issue is not, it's just
at that point,
words.
When a no probable cause, there is no transcript. All there is some notes from an investigator's file. But under the doctrine of expressio unius exclusio alteris, with just what this court has recognized, this canon states that the legislature, when the legislature enumerated one or more specific items.
Is there an English meaning to that?
Yes, when the class of items has been listed and only one or two has been listed in that class, any exclusion of that is recognized. But anyway, an election of remedies has to be knowing. This Ms. Smith and the other claimants in the state of Ohio were never put on notice that there was even an election of remedies that could be present for any other claims other than age discrimination. I request that this court not deny Friendship Village's request to rewrite Chapter 4112 and affirm the Court of Appeals ruling.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morrow. Mr. Day, you've saved almost 3 minutes of your time.
Mr. Day, will you bring your brief with you, please?
Yes, Your Honor. The merit brief?
Yes, sir. Yeah, your brief filed January 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
And go to page 11.
I hope that's not the typographic error I caught last night. Page 11.
This case was certified to us from the Franklin County Court of Appeals.
I'm on page 11.
As being in conflict with Hultberg, is that right?
Yes.
All right. Do you quote Hultberg on page 11?
I believe I do.
Hultberg then, from the quote in the second paragraph, says, "We agree with the Lucas County Court of Appeals and the Cuyahoga County Court of Appeals that the abandonment of one process in favor of another is not warranted," and so on. Did Hultberg agree with those two courts? Because both of those courts have said you don't have to elect.
I can't track up through for you right now because I don't have the case names in this quotation.
Well, they're right there.
But it's my understanding that those were two other cases.
I just want to know if this case is really in conflict.
I can't answer your question, certainly. There are two other things, though, I would like to point out. The Court of Appeals reviewed Hultberg in this case in detail before certifying it. It is not easy to get Franklin County to certify a conflict. And I think they did it point by point to say that they are identical. The other thing is, my opponent has attempted to separate out the no probable cause finding of the commission as something to be treated differently from any decisions after there is an evidentiary hearing. The statutes don't do that. The appeal is, the commission under 05 is required to make a no probable cause finding and tell the complainant they won't issue a complaint. The judicial review statute, Section A, says any complainant or respondent claiming to be aggrieved by a final order of the commission, including a refusal to issue a complaint. So the review process follows no matter what the ultimate decision. And finally, Your Honor, the transcript that is referred to in Section G of 06, I would submit, is the record of everything the commission has done by way of investigation to go to the Complice Court. And the reason I say that is this court, I believe, has said, and I know Court of Appeals have said, that the court can, or the complainant can appeal to the Complice Court and the Court of Appeals on the inadequacy or insufficiency of the investigation. So that material has to get before the Complice Court. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Day. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.